Well, good afternoon. What day is this? Is this Saturday? It seems like a Sunday to me for some reason. Good to see you again and glad that we can have another chance to study together. I have so much enjoyed the singing part of this meeting. You just have wonderful singing here at this congregation. And I really enjoyed worshiping God with you in that way. And all of the other things that we've been able to do so far have been very enjoyable. I don't think it's wrong for us to say that we enjoy this kind of weekend. In the very highest sense, we ought to enjoy being about the most important things in life. And so I appreciate the time that we've had together so far. A right relationship with God is certainly not something that happens by accident, is it? You just don't wake up one day and find that you've awakened into a rich and right relationship with the Lord. It's something that requires deliberate decision and action on our parts. And so we're thinking about that this week and under the theme of diligently seeking God. We're looking at Hebrews chapter 11 and verse 6, which says, "Without faith it is impossible to please Him. For he who comes to God must believe that He is, and that He is a rewarder of those who diligently seek Him." So far, we've talked about whether God can be pleased. We raised that question last night and answered it in the affirmative. Yes, God can be pleased, and we need to be encouraged by that fact. And this morning, we talked about whether we really do believe that God exists to the extent that we sometimes say that we do. All of us can have a stronger faith. So we talked this morning about growing a faith that's more strong. So this afternoon, we're going to talk about the matter of seeking God. We'll get to the diligence part tomorrow, but this afternoon I want us to think about what's involved in seeking God. That language of seeking God is often heard nowadays. You'll hear a lot of people in the various communities in which we live talking about seekers. Some churches have special services that they call seeker services, and some people will describe themselves nowadays as being seekers. Unfortunately, I think a lot of what passes for seeking God nowadays is little more than an exercise in self-gratification. What many people have in mind when they talk about seeking God is not seeking Him as He is, but they are seeking God to be what they want God to be, and thinking of that even in selfish terms, of what God can do for them rather than seeking God for His own sake. And so while the idea of seeking God is very familiar right now, I think there's a lot that we can properly think about together this afternoon concerning what would really and truly be involved in seeking God if we wanted to seek Him seriously. Now, first of all, I want to think with you for a minute or two about some things that seeking God is not. And I'm going to put on the chart here in a second some items that all are very important. Now, I want to try to clarify before I even embark on this that I am not minimizing the things that we're going to talk about. These are very important things. In fact, they are things that you would do if you are seeking God. They go along with seeking God, but they are not the same as seeking God. And the reason I think we need to think about that is that if you are doing these things that I'm going to enumerate for you, be careful that you don't prematurely congratulate yourself and pat yourself on the back and say, "Well, I'm seeking God because I'm doing those things." You may or may not be seeking God. These are things that might be done for other reasons. And we need to look into our hearts to see what's going on there. For example, church membership and attendance. Is it important to find a faithful group of the Lord's people to work and worship with? And is it important to assemble with them every time we have the opportunity? Well, certainly it is. If we had another sermon, I could well stress the importance of that. But church attendance and even regular church membership and church attendance don't by themselves mean that we are seeking God. There might be any number of other reasons why people would attend church. Some reasons more honorable than others, but you might be here because of habit this afternoon. You might be here because of social peer pressure or just any number of things might account for the fact that you are here other than seeking God. So while those are very important, those by themselves don't constitute seeking God. What about Bible study and prayer? Those important? Yes, they're very important. I wouldn't minimize those at all, but I know some very avid Bible students who aren't seeking God. And I know some people that place a great deal of emphasis on prayer. And it's not about God, they just feel better when they pray. It gives them a psychological lift. As far as Bible study is concerned, one of the most competent New Testament scholars that I ever studied under in graduate school days was an atheist. He knew more about the Greek New Testament than I will ever know. But he wasn't seeking God. He was simply studying that as ancient literature. This is another scholar, might specialize in Babylonian literature or Roman literature. He was just fascinated by those as ancient documents, but it had nothing to do about God with him. But yet he was an avid student of the Bible. He came to Bible study. He did a lot of that, but it didn't have anything to do with God. And so I hope that you engage in a lot of Bible study and prayer. But I hope it's because you're seeking God. Some people think, well, helping others is what it's about. You know, we need to try to alleviate as much of the suffering as we can in the world and make this world a better place. Well, that's important. But some of the most benevolent, philanthropic-minded people that you know are not doing it because they're seeking God. That alone doesn't make us seekers. Doctrinal soundness, as important as that is, wouldn't necessarily mean that you're seeking God. You could be as pure doctrinally as the wind-driven snow and not be seeking God. Not even personal evangelism. You know, the Lord said about the Pharisees in Matthew 23 that you compass sea and land to make one proselyte, and when you've made a convert, you turn him into twice as much a son of hell as you are. So not even personal evangelism by itself would mean that we are seekers. Some people think it's just spiritual feelings, you know, they would define themselves as seekers because when they think of God, they just feel some very spiritual feelings. Well, feelings are important. I wouldn't minimize that. I think maybe folks like us go to the other extreme of totally leaving feelings out of the seeking of God, but that by itself wouldn't be seeking. And not even a love for the truth, as important as that is. Question is, why do you want the truth? Why do you want to know it? Is it just an intellectual exercise? You just enjoy studying various arguments, pro and con? Jesus said in John 7 and 17, he who wills to do the will of the Father, he'll know whether the teaching is from God or from man. So there's more involved even than simply loving the truth. Well, you could add things to that list that are important, that go along with seeking God. But we need to be careful. Just because we are doing some of those things, maybe doing all of those things, we may or may not be seeking God, depending on why we are doing those things. So what is it? Well, I'm going to give you a little three-part definition now, and then we're going to look at some verses of Scripture that will illustrate this. This doesn't come from any one passage. This, I think, comprehends what the whole Bible teaches in the Old and the New Testament about what you would do if you really and truly were seeking God. So we'll define it and then we'll take a little closer look at it. First of all, to seek God, you would have to be growing in obedience. You would want to be whatever God wanted you to be. If he had a will, you'd want to know what that will was and how you could fulfill that will. So you'd want to be growing in your obedience to the will of God. But you would want to be doing that because you had a sincere desire both to love and honor God. The reasons are important. And both of those reasons have to be put together. We're seeking God. We want to grow in our obedience, but we want to do that because we first love Him and honor Him. We'll talk a little bit more about the importance of the fact that you have to have both of those things together in order to have a true seeking. And then you'd want to be doing more of that each day. You're not content with where you are about that right now. You're seeking in that you're wanting to grow more in your obedience. You're wanting to love and honor Him more every day so that you're making progress in that. Now then, let's look at some descriptions of that in the Bible. You are aware, I expect, if you study the Bible very much, that there aren't very many basic ideas in the Bible. There are only just a few. But those basic ideas are illustrated in a lot of different ways. God will illustrate a fundamental truth this way, and then He'll give us a story over here that illustrates it from a little bit different angle. So we have fundamental ideas that run throughout the Bible that are illustrated in many ways and described in many different ways. Psalm 27 verse 4 is an interesting passage that talks about desiring God. So you could think about seeking God, diligently seeking God, in terms of desiring Him. That's just one way of describing that same idea. David says in this passage, Psalm 27 and verse 1. Well, let's go to verse 4. One thing I have desired of the Lord, and that will I seek, that I may dwell in the house of the Lord all the days of my life. If you've read the Psalms very much, you realize that it was a very personal thing between David and God, wasn't it? It wasn't just an intellectual exercise. He desired God. He said, one thing have I desired, that I might dwell in the house of the Lord. That's simply one scriptural way of describing this idea of seeking God. Jesus, in the 22nd chapter of Matthew in the New Testament, was asked what was the most important commandment in the law. And you remember that passage. He went back to Deuteronomy and quoted from Deuteronomy, "You shall love the Lord your God with all your heart, with all your soul, and with all your mind." So loving God with all of our hearts is simply another way of saying the same thing.
us, that He is present with us in an assembly such as we have this afternoon. But we don't have what Adam and Eve had. That was lost when sin came into the world and Adam and Eve were expelled from the Garden of Paradise. And so there's a sense in which when sin entered the world, God withdrew His direct presence from human beings so that it is not possible in this world for God anymore to give Himself completely and perfectly to us as He did in the case of Adam and Eve. Sin makes that impossible in this world. He has made a plan whereby one, in the future, that one day will be ours. In heaven we will have that. And I expect more than what Adam and Eve had in heaven. I don't know. But for the time being, there's still some distance between us and God. Here's the point. We seek God. We are wanting that gap to be narrowed and narrowed and narrowed as much as it can in this life. And certainly we're wanting the gap to be completely removed when the Lord returns and we enjoy that perfect fellowship with God forever. Do you remember the first time you fell in love? Enjoy, but which we lost in sin, that dissatisfies us. We're not content with any situation in this life. I don't care how good it is, materially or temporally. We're not satisfied. We are longing, desiring, seeking a relationship with the Lord that we can't have even in this life in its perfection. We are wanting to be as close to Him as we can be. Philippians chapter 1 and verse 20. Paul makes an astounding statement, really. When, as he contemplated whether he was going to be put to death, as he wrote the letter to Philippi, he was in prison somewhere, probably Rome, I think, not knowing what the outcome was going to be. But he asked the Philippians to pray for him about the outcome. And listen to Paul in verse 20. According to my earnest expectation and hope, that in nothing I shall be ashamed, but that with all boldness, as always, so now also, listen, here's what he wanted, that Christ will be magnified in my body, whether by life or by death. Think about that. Paul's in prison. He may be released, but they may be put him to death. Would you have a preference about that if you were Paul? Well, he had a preference. And what was it? To be put to death. To depart with Christ, he said, be far better. But if the Lord had more work for him to do, he'd be willing to stay and do that work for however long the Lord wanted him. But regardless of what Paul's personal preference in it was, what was really the only thing that Paul wanted? That Christ to be most greatly glorified through whatever happened, whatever it was. Whether they chopped his head off or he had 50 more years to have to work, all Paul wanted was that Christ to be magnified or glorified through what happened to him, no matter what it was. That was really all Paul wanted. That's a man who's seeking God. That's a man who really only wants to be rightly related to the glory of God, and he's not concerned about the particulars. He'd be willing for those to be whatever God chooses for them to be. He only wants that which would most greatly glorify the Lord. I'm not there yet, are you? Have you ever had your picture made in a large group of people, maybe 200 people in a graduating class or some large group? So the photographer's got to get everybody arranged. So he tries to get the short people down front here and the big people in the back, so everybody's face at least can be seen in the photograph. So here's some person that's back in the back row where he's not very conspicuous, So right before the photographer gets ready to take the picture, this person comes down front and says, "Wait just a minute." He said, "Sir, I would like to stand out front. I think it'd be a much better picture if I were standing right down front." What would the photographer say? He'd say, "Sir, this picture is not about you. This is a group picture. And I will respectfully ask you to stand wherever I ask you to stand for the good of the picture as a whole. It's not about you." The sense in which this life in which we live is a group photo being made of the entire human race by our Creator. To seek Him means not to seek this or that particular life that I want that He can provide for me. It's not to want to do this or that that would please me. It is to seek only that God will be glorified and His creation will be glorified regardless of where I'm asked to stand in the group photo. That doesn't matter if I'm seeking God. Most people, when they think about seeking God, they're seeking Him to give them permission to stand where they want to stand in the group of them. That's what it's about. But that's not what seeking God is. We're describing being the Lord's honor. Do you have any preference about whether you be a general or a foot soldier? If you're seeking God, it won't matter. You be willing to fill any role in the Lord's army, as long as the Lord's army, as long as His cause is being victorious, you will simply say, "You just tell me what to do. I'm ready to do it. That's all I want." Some of you know Brock and Drake. You know, they were and still are violinists. They live down here. They played the violin and still do. They played in many orchestras. If you've ever played in an orchestra, you know, there's a big difference between playing first chair, first violin, and the concert master, the most important player in the orchestra, as opposed to sitting so far back in the second violins that nobody out front can even see you. Well, they've had both experiences. They know what it's like to sit back in the second violin section, and they know what it's like to be concert master. But suppose Beethoven has written his Ninth Symphony. He was deaf when he wrote that, so you just have to work with me here. The illustration. Suppose they're rehearsing the Ninth Symphony for it to be performed for the first time. And Maestro has written into the percussion part a single note struck on a triangle that somebody's got to play back there in the percussion section. And so your part is just to stand back there waiting to play your one note on the triangle back there in the back of the orchestra. And so while they're rehearsing, you come to the front and say, "Maestro, this is a pretty good piece you've written here, but it'd be much better if the triangle part were more prominent. So I would recommend that you let me come out front here and play a little bit more on this instrument here." What would Maestro Beethoven say? "This symphony is not about you. And if you would like to be in this orchestra, we're glad to have you, but I'll thank you to stay back there and play the note that I designed for you to play. Because the music is the thing, not your heart." You see the point that we're trying to make here. seek God is to seek Him, His glory, at any price, by any role, whatever it means for me. So I'm not seeking what I can get out of Him for me. I'm seeking Him for His glory. Tell you what. My life right now is not anything. Not anything like what I wanted it to be. When I was a little boy, living in Meridian, Mississippi on 30th Avenue, laying out in the front yard on the St. Augustine grass one summer afternoon, looking up at the blue sky and the clouds passing by, dreaming about what it would be like to be a grown. What it would be like when I was a grown. The path has taken some horribly painful twists and turns. My life as an evangelist is not anything like what I would like for it to be. I wish I could be a Jordan Slocum. Do that. But that's not the path for me, right? So what do I say to God? God, here's how I want to serve. Hear what I want the circumstances to be. I'll be pleased to be a servant of yours if it can go like this. Here's the scenario that I would decide. What would the Lord say to me? Eric, this is not about me. I will thank you to play the role that I give you to play right now and be grateful for it. Whether it's what you want. There are days when I fall to my knees and beg the Lord that it might be different. Never will be. Days when the emptiness and the isolation and the pain are nearly more than I can bear. But if the Lord says, here, my grace is sufficient. You will more greatly glorify me this way than you could any other. So I must bow my head and humbly say, thy will be done. And not just accept it, but be grateful for it. You see how different seeking God is from what so many people have in mind when they talk so frivolously about seeking God. Really all they have in mind is seeking some kind of life they think God can provide for them. I believe what we're talking about here is in every respect a first principles subject. Here's some of my preaching brethren call for more first principles preaching. And I would agree with that. My concern is that our first principles are not basic enough. Let me tell you, what we're talking about this afternoon is way more fundamental than baptism. One reason so many of the few converts that we see made at our day and time don't last any longer than they do is because we baptize people who haven't been first been brought to the point where they are seeking God. I tell you, somebody's seeking God in the sense that we've just been talking about. They won't quibble at baptism. They won't quibble at anything they're asked to do in order to have this gift that God makes possible in Christ. You don't find any of the sermons, no sermon in the book of Acts talks about what a person has to do to become a Christian until you had somebody asking, how can I do this? What do I have to do? Seeking God is a way more fundamental subject than what you do to come into a right relationship with God after you come to the point of seeking Him. It's among the weightier matters that the Lord talked about in Matthew 23 and 23. This is about as weighty as you can get, our theme this weekend. So truly, prior consideration to the many of the things that we think we are talking about when we start talking about basics and first principles. Remember the time when Paul had an opportunity to talk to Felix, the Roman governor? Maybe a one-time opportunity. For all he knew, he would never see this man ever again. But what would you say?
You had a one-time audience with a high-ranking government official. Acts 24, verse 25 says he reasoned about righteousness, self-control, and the judgment to come. Felix was afraid and answered, "Go away. When I have a convenient time, I will call." Paul understood that what this man needed at that point was not to understand how you respond to the gospel, but to see his need for the gospel. To see that he had not been seeking God, he had been rebelling against God. It must have struck pretty close to home. Felix began to get nervous and changed the subject. So this is a concern that is prior to the concerns that many of us think we have when we think we're talking about the basics. God makes some wonderful promises, doesn't he, to the seeker? Jeremiah 29, verses 12 through 13, the people of Israel who were going to be sent away into Babylonian captivity, he said, get into captivity. He said, then you will call upon me and go and pray to me, and I will listen to you. You will seek me and find me when you search for me with all of your heart. He's there waiting to be found, but by whom? The person who will seek him with all of the heart. Jesus said it in Matthew 7, Sermon on the Mount, verse 7, ask and it will be given to you. Seek, there's our word, seek and you will find. Knock and it will be opened to you, for everyone who asks receives. And he who seeks finds, and to him who knocks, it will be open. So are we seeking God or not? Well, what about the knowledge of God? If you tell me that you are a seeker, but you're not very much interested in studying this book to find out any more of the truth about God, then I'm going to question whether you're seeking. If we seek God, we will be thirsty for every tidbit of information that we can find about God as He really is. And that'll be the primary reason why we'll study this book. We're wanting to know more of God. And delighted to find anything new about God that we didn't know before. If you're not interested in that, then don't tell me you're a seeker. Something else is going on. What about the will of God? We seek God, we will be delighted to find anything that He has commanded us to do that maybe we didn't know about before. So here's something new we can start doing that will please our Father. We're seeking to honor Him, and we're, how do we define seeking? Growing in obedience. We're wanting to obey. We're wanting to perfect our obedience more than it has been in the past. And we study the Bible, we're looking for obeyable information. Thrill when we find something that God has commanded that maybe we haven't known about before, but we can start doing because it pleases our Father. If obedience is a chore to you, you react against the concept of obedience, then you're not seeking the Lord. If you're seeking the Lord, you'll be eager about the subject of obedience. But what about the worship of God? Certainly, if you're seeking, you would take great delight in worshiping God. You'd be delighted to be even able at a great distance to approach God to worship Him. It wouldn't be a dreary chore or obligation at all. You would thrill at the very thought of worshiping Him. So, if worship is a problem for you, if the brethren here have to twist your arm to get you to come to any service except the Sunday morning service, then you've got a ways to go before it can be said that you're seeking the Lord. You're seeking, you want to be here every time you have a chance, and not just worshiping God with other Christians. You'll be worshiping God 7 days a week in your own private life, even if there's nobody else to worship with at a given moment. And then finally, what about the people of God? Did you ever think, you know, that sometimes it would be nice if you could have the Lord without the Lord's people? You ever? Am I just the only one that would talk about it? Lord's perfect. And His people aren't. But sometimes there's some difficulty, isn't there, in relating to the Lord's people. But you can't have the Lord without the Lord's people. If you're seeking the Lord, you'll be delighted to have whatever kind of connection you can with the Lord's people, even with their warts and their wrinkles. Because you've got something to do. We'll understand that it is a considerably high privilege that the Lord has conferred upon us to allow us to be a part of His people with all their imperfections. So if you've got a problem with the Lord's people, you're not seeking the Lord. Because his people come in the same bargain that he does. And we'll be thrilled to be a part of his people.
God is seeking those who are seeking him. Malachi chapter 3 and verse 16. One of the most beautiful passages in the Old Testament. It talks about God having a book of remembrance. Then those who feared the Lord spoke to one another, and the Lord listened and heard them. So a book of remembrance was written before him for those who fear the Lord and who meditate on his name. In evangelism, we are looking for them that are looking for him. How grammatical that is, but that makes the point. And the Lord is looking for those who are seeking him, however many or few they may be. I was humbled to the point of tears last night when 13-year-old Ellen Perkins came up to me and bashfully asked me to sign her copy of Diligently Seeking God. Christy, your mother, told me that she was just baptized into Christ this week. There's a young soul who is seeking, sincerely seeking, thrilled for every new thing that she can learn about her life. I hope that she'll always be that way. I hope the difficulties of this life don't beat that out of her, as it sometimes happens in the case of some of us. There are some who are seeking. However many or few they may be, there are some who are seeking, and the Lord has a special favor for them. They'll find the Lord. They seek him with all of their hearts. So let me just ask you a question here at the end. Have you grown up in sound, faithful congregations? I never really learned what it's about. It's a desire for God himself. I know it's possible to do that, because I think I did. And please be advised that it's no criticism of my parents or their generation. It's entirely appropriate that every generation sees farther, faster than their parents did. Brock and Grant are way ahead spiritually where I was when I was their age. That's the way it should be. They're standing on my shoulders. They see everything I see in them. And their children will see farther, faster than they do. So I'm not criticizing my parents or their generation or the congregations that I was privileged to be a part of when I was a child. But I'm afraid in those years we emphasize certain things about correct outward forms of work and worship. And we didn't talk at all about desiring and loving God himself. Years ago, I preached these lessons at a place where Sewell Hall happened to be in the audience one night. He came up to me afterwards, just with tears in his eyes. He said, "You're so right." He said, "I didn't see this when I was young." He said, "How could we not have seen it? If we'd even opened the Bible, how could we not have seen it?" I don't know. Many of us have not seen it. Until, unfortunately, life caves in and some crisis makes us get real about God. It doesn't have to come to that. Any more than you have to have a heart attack before you start eating right. But for most of us, it takes some kind of crisis. Make us get real about important things. So it doesn't matter when it may have first dawned on you that there was more involved in this than simply the important truths about how one becomes a Christian, how Christians are to work and to worship together. Religion is not only about serving God faithfully and correctly, it's about desiring Him.
All of this factual information is about Him. It is the way by which He has designed we may come home to Him. We need to keep the focus on Him. Psalm 27, verse 4, what did David say? One thing I have desired of the Lord, that will I seek, that I may dwell in the house of the Lord all the days of my life, to behold the beauty of the Lord, and to inquire in His temple. Having a deeper desire for God every day is what this life is all about. And I'm embarrassed to tell you that I'm not where I need to be about that, even now, after 10 or 15 years of thinking about these subjects nearly nonstop. I've just scratched the surface. But we are works in progress. Trying to learn a little bit every day, and do a little bit better every day. See more clearly what it's all about. And so we're not embarrassed about the fact that we see more today than we saw yesterday. Because tomorrow, if we're working on it, we're receiving the Lord's help, we'll see more tomorrow than we saw today. But that's as far as we're going to go this afternoon with this subject. So we'll put the bookmark there, and tomorrow morning, Lord willing, those of us who are able to assemble here at San Marcos will continue this line of thought. May we grow in our obedience with a desire both to love and honor God more each day. Thank you so much for being here this afternoon. Not many of you even got drowsy. I was really surprised after lunch that we would all be able to stay awake. Thank you so much for being so attentive. I must just say to you, you are a remarkably attentive audience. You listen as if you were sponges, wanting to soak up as much as you could. And I just tell you, that makes a great difference for those of us who stand up and try to preach and teach when people listen as attentively as you have to these lessons. So thank you so very much. Some of you are people whom I love dearly. Some of us have been on a long and winding path together for quite some years now. In recent years, our paths have diverged. We've been working in different parts of the vineyard. But it encourages me so much to know that here in this part of the Lord's vineyard, you are working, you are serving, doing what's right, and loving the Lord. And I'm just pleased to say that I know you. Thanks for being who you are. If we can assist you in obeying the gospel of the Lord in any way this afternoon, if you are subject to the Lord's invitation in any way that we can help you with, we are at your beck and call. We want to help you and encourage you. Won't you come right now while we stand and sing?
Lord, save our